Wednesday Night Rugby on Off the Ball.
All right, Gerry Thorney of the Irish Times is in studio. How are you, Gerry?
Good, thanks, Nathan. How are you?
Keith Wood should be on the line as well. Evening, Keith.
Hi, Ethan. How are you?
So we're over the first week of the season. Some of the results from the Irish provinces. Ulster 42-19 winners over the Cheetahs. Munster 34-3 win over Benetton Treviso. Leinster went to Wales and beat Dragons 39-16. And Connacht, the only Irish province to lose, beaten at home by Glasgow 18-12. Maybe one other score of note, the Southern Kings debut in the Pro 14. They were beaten 57-10 over in Scarlets. Gerry, 99 points conceded by the two South African side. Something of an ignominious start for them. What are your expectations for them over these first few weeks?
Not great. The Cheetahs are the better of the two, but they're divvying up their commitments, splitting their squads, splitting their backroom staff to compete in two fronts almost simultaneously. They're playing in the Currie Cup the same weekends they're playing in the Pro 14. And looking at their website, they say this is due to the, quote, short notice, unquote, in which they were admitted to the Pro 14, which shows you was very much a last-minute job. I'm hearing on the grapevine that this is going to have particular logistical difficulties for Leinster, who are first to go over there in a couple of weeks' time and play the two of them back-to-back, that, you know, organising flights at this late stage and whatever is proving, and seats and planes for business class and so forth for their players, is proving quite problematic. But on the plane front, it is worth noting that perhaps the Pro 14 compares more than favourably with the Currie Cup, because of the starting 15 that beat the Golden Lions the week before, and the Cheetahs are going very well. They're second in the Currie Cup in the standings. Of that 15 that beat the Golden Lions the week before, a dozen pitched up in Ravenhill. So they appear to have prioritised the Pro 14, but not to any great negligible effect. I think it's easy enough to be negative at this point in time. They're not being that competitive, and they mightn't be in the first few weeks or maybe over the course of this first season, but they probably will get better. And they're saying that this clash won't happen again. How they're going to get around that, I don't know. But I would say they were certainly entertaining to watch, and they did concede the Cheetahs 26 points while they were down to 14 men. The two yellow cards hit them hard. And there's some pace in their ranks, and they an exciting brand of rugby. And it was an entertaining match, albeit they ultimately weren't that competitive over the course of the 80 minutes.
Keith, is there any danger that they bring the competition into some sort of disrepute over these first few weeks? In that, so Ulster have got their win against the Cheetahs. Scarlets have hammered the Southern Kings. But they're going to get stronger as the season goes on. So you could well see Connacht facing a far different side in 3-4 months' time than the one Scarlets and Ulster have had to face this week. It doesn't seem like it's a particularly level playing field.
No, I think that's the nature of the rushed entry into it. And look, I don't know that people are entirely happy with them coming in. I do think that the view from Pro 12 to Pro 14 was that it's time for change and something needs to be done, because the amount of money that's been generated by television deals elsewhere is proving to be a huge gap. I would have said it was a very hasty entry and a bit early, but I do know that something had to change, and this was the route in which Pro Rugby decided to take. And I'm not saying we can all just forget about the things that we wouldn't particularly like about that and say, yeah, let's support it to the fullest. But this is a rugby playing country that will react properly and will go very well, I would say, by the middle of it, by the end of this season. And that may lead itself open to some pretty tough matches for you know, I think the guys at the start may get the easier run of it, but yeah. I would expect them to become an awful lot better. I would also see them being a conduit for other players to join their ranks next year and the year after as an opportunity to go and play in Europe. And, you know, there's an awful lot at stake in rugby at the present moment in time, and this is one of the first power moves outside the norm for that to happen. So for that, it's exciting. For the standard of the play and the sort of confusion of splitting squads is very awkward, but I think we have to kind of grin and bear it for a while and hope that it is something that can be of benefit down the line. We just don't have all the information for it, and it did happen very late in the day.
As Keith mentioned there, the overriding reason for all this is that something needed to change in the Pro 12 and TV rights deals and getting an enhanced TV rights deal. But right now, you mentioned there Leinster's logistical difficulties of having to go to South Africa next week. Financially, is that a huge burden on the provinces? suddenly having to bring 40, 50 people?
I'm told that will be the cost of these trips, like going to Italy, will be covered.
Okay.
So that won't be an issue. It's just more the actual, you know, people think because it's a limited time difference that, you know, it's a short hop, skip and away. But of course it isn't, as Keith knows very well. And that it's just the logistical difficulties of getting there at, you know, just a few days before the match and then returning. And the games are only 5 days apart. They're playing Sunday, Friday, I think. So that's going to be quite taxing for them. And I would imagine they'll come back from that trip fairly drained. And you make a very good point, and that is the unevenness of this. Not alone do some teams are going to have 11 home games and 10 away, or vice versa over the course of the season, but also that's their one and only meeting with the Cheetahs at home when they were competing the same weekend, the Currie Cup. Definitely in a more preferable time to be facing them.
Yeah. Let's look back then on what happened. We've quite a few texts coming in saying it's the first weekend, lads. No point in the media running this down. Give it some sort of a chance. And we'll definitely do that. So Munster, we might start with them. 34-3 win over Treviso, a game they would have been expected to win. Keith, the players who stood out, a lot of people raving about Andrew Conway. His progress over the last few seasons, how impressed have you been?
Well, I thought last season he seemed to kind of just raise another gear. And it was interesting watching him at the weekend. He just looked on fire. And sometimes there's a time for players to shine and for injuries to be put behind them, for dips in form to be put behind them. And all you want to do is get a good start to the season. And he was electric at the weekend. And he looked dangerous all the time. It's funny, I don't think you can win or lose the Pro 14 in the first weekend. And I tend not to get too excited at the start, because all people have different preparations, different teams do different things. It takes 3 or 4 or 5 weeks to fully bed into it, to get the best out of the players, to get fully up to match speed. But he didn't seem to need it. He was just flying at a million miles an hour, which was great to see.
Jerry, on Andrew Conway.
He made other people look like they were running on the spot. Mm.
Yeah, and that probably shows a brilliant attitude from him over the summer, that he knew this was a real opportunity for him to get in at the start of the season and make some sort of an impression. That fullback jersey at Munster, maybe he's looking further than that. Maybe he's looking towards a fullback jersey for Ireland down the line.
Yeah, he's certainly as hungry as he has ever been in his career. And I guess he's looked around and seen players, contemporaries or those who come after him, you know, after a stellar under 20 World Cup, and he's seen their progress into the provincial ranks and the professional ranks and then up to the international team, kind of passing him out. And he wants it very badly, and he looks to be, certainly last season I thought it was his best yet. He added more to his game. He was really good in the air, even though he got tumbled in the air a few times and landed painfully. He was braveness personified in the air. He's still, but most of all, he's got that pace. He's got that X factor, and he showed it the weekend. Top of the ground conditions, ideal for him. You know, it's great for Munster. They have these options out in their back three and the wide channels. You know, with Keith Earls there on the summer tour, looked as well as he ever has done as well. You know, we shouldn't forget that, the old man of the squad. But he was, every time you looked up at the screen, he was there. He was making another break, laying on another try, scoring another try. So it's good. You've got Zeebo in there as well, and Darren Sweepin, the progress he made last season. First off, I think, yes, they will. Of course, players will be targeting November in a major way, and the Six Nations and international honours. But it's just so competitive in the provinces now that first off, you just got to get your form right for the province. And he has hit the ground running in every sense.
Mm, probably no more than anywhere is Leinster, the competitiveness, particularly looking at the back row. It was really Tony Ward today, where he was going through some of the options. Rhys Ruddock, Josh van der Fleer, Dan Levy, Sean O'Brien, Jordy Murphy, Jamie Heaslip, Max Deegan, Jack Conan. That on the assumption that Scott Fardy plays in the second row. You got 8 players there.
All internationals.
For 3 positions. Mm. Is that a difficult enough juggling job for Leo Cullen, Keith?
I think it's one of those beautiful, difficult things, because part of all these players, part of it being homegrown players, are that they want to play for the province. They're not automatically looking to get out the gap. There's been so many injuries in the Leinster back row. You know, we haven't ever seen Jamie Heaslip got injured. He got injured for the first time. And the second he got injured, suddenly 2 more names seemed to pop up in Leinster's back row. So the strength of depth is great for them. It's difficult to manage, but a lot of them are young enough to manage well. And the guy that I feel almost sad for in many respects is Josh van der Fleer, because he was brilliant last autumn. Then he gets injured. Then we don't see him so much. Other guys suddenly put their hand up. So I'm looking forward to seeing him play and getting, you know, as as efficient as he was last year, he got over the gain line all the time. He was a nuisance all the time. And an awful lot of good play for Leinster went around him last year. So it'll be interesting to see how he gets back up to it. But look at Dan Levy and Deegan. You know, it's pretty great to see those sort of younger guys coming through.
Can that be difficult for someone mentally, Keith? Someone like Josh van der Fleer, who was playing some of the best rugby of his life. You get injured and suddenly you are looking that there's seven other guys fighting out for positions in that back row that you're not going to get a game every single week, and when you are on, you're putting a little bit too much pressure on yourself?
Well, I think injuries can make or break players. I can go back to being injured myself and sitting on the bench for Ireland at 20 years of age and thinking that the world was at my feet, and then dislocating my shoulder the following weekend and not playing for 9 months, and you're kind of emotionally dashed on the rocks and you're trying to, you know, figure out whether it's over for you and you haven't even started and you've only and a little tiny taste of the big time, and suddenly you're not in there. Van der Fleer has tasted the big time. He has delivered on the big stage. I think he's got something special with him, and it is about how your coach and all your guys are able to manage that with you. But I think there's a serious amount of rugby ahead for that guy, and it augurs very well for Leinster to have players of his calibre. And I would say his mental strength. I've watched some of the play that he's had on coming back. He still offers an awful lot for a guy who was out for quite a while.
Jamie Heaslip, Jerry, have we any idea about when we can expect to see him back on the pitch?
Quite soon, apparently. He's well on the road to recovery now. And the thing about it is that, you know, you almost forget about a player like Jamie Heaslip because so much has happened in the interim. But he's a fabulous footballer who's the criticism of whom sometimes I find a bit perplexing, given his consistency, his value on the team, his leadership, the way he always makes the right calls. He almost never loses the ball. He always makes the right decisions. He's just such an intelligent all-round footballer, ticks so many boxes. His numbers are phenomenal. And he's always been one of the first names that any Joe Schmidt team sheet, which tells you all you need to know about the player in my book. And the thing is, yes, they've got this ridiculous list and conveyor belt of back rowers, but then, and it's probably the single most competitive area of any team in the Pro 14, any combination in the Pro 14, would be the Leinster back row. But the likes of Jamie and Shawnee, they're fitting well and are going well for Ireland. You know, they won't play even half the Pro 14 games. There will be opportunities for all these other players, and they will be used. Leinster used something like 55 players last season, competing in two fronts, and there will be game time for all of them. I mean, there were times last season as well when Reece Ruddock was producing some of the best rugby of his life. He was outstanding away to Claremont in the semi-final, and he had a good summer tour as well. So it's a remarkable... Like I was saying earlier, if you make the Leinster back row, you're one foot into the Irish back row.
I always sense when you're out at the RDS, there's so much love for Jack Conan. He seems to be quite a cult hero out there now. And his sort of battle with Heaslip has been an interesting one, in that Heaslip was always number one. If he was out or he was away, Conan stepped in. Whereas Conan, the run he's had in the team over the last 6 months in Heaslip's absence, is it going to be difficult for Heaslip to shift Conan for those big European games?
I don't think it's going to be difficult that difficult for him, because of what Jerry just said, that he has delivered so often on the big stage. I would say that the criticisms that come from Jamie Heaslip are not about all the things that he does, because he does a huge amount, but some of the things that he doesn't. And actually what Jack Conan does is run and carries over the gain line incredibly well, I would say, to a higher level than Jamie does at the present moment in time. He isn't the full package that Jamie is. And when you have two players like that who can have such an impact on a game, you just try and play on the strength of both wherever you can. So whether you share your time or you fit both of them into a back row at different times, and Leinster don't need to do that because of the array of talent that they have in the back row. But I do think ball carrying, getting over the gain line as a very fast number eight, is something that that Jamie used to do an awful lot more of. And actually, that's where some of the criticism comes. Of course, he's got great figures. He tackles incredibly well. He rarely coughs up the ball at any stage. He covers quite a lot of ground defensively. He's a good leader, and he has done very well. And he wins, and he knows how to win. So it's hard to budge one of those players, but you're always looking for the spark of something different. And for me, Jack Conan has brought that in the last year.
Max Deegan, then, is he the guy who's going to have to make his name during this Pro 12 campaign and try and force his way in as the European games kick into gear?
It's going to be difficult for him. I mean, he's a great talent and he's only 20 years of age, but you'd imagine it'll be some effort for him to force his way into the the European Cup starting back row, given if everybody's fit and well. It will be some achievement on his part if he's to do so. I still think that, you know, when it comes to the big, big games, as Keith was alluding to there, you know, head coaches and their assistant coaches tend to go with the tried and trusted, the ones who've got delivered for them in the past. And I could see Max Deegan playing a fair few Pro 14 games this season, and, you know, his development will come in time. Also, Leinster are very good in kind of recognising that a playing career is a marathon, not a sprint, and not overplaying them and minding their younger players and develop them, you know, gradually in relatively piecemeal fashion so that they don't get burnt out too quickly. And there have been instances in the past where players have done that. It happens less and less. You look at a career like Devon Toner's, and, you know, it's a long game, and I think they manage their players superbly, and they can afford to, of course, when they've got such strength and depth.
Yeah.
Noel Murphy used to say, and you'll probably get the quote in before I do, Jerry, but he used to say always, you're only ever only an injury away. And what Leinster have at this opportunity is three or four number eights that if someone's gone, you'd say, yeah, that's awful. We've lost the leadership, the skills, the great all-round play of Jamie Heaslip. But then you have to pop somebody else into the position to go and do it. And, you know, I think for the first time in a long while, you have a level of depth at eight, maybe in Leinster, that they haven't had.
Eason Asewa playing at 12. Was this a one-off experiment needs must, or is this a new grand plan for the back line at Leinster?
Well, with Issa, he can just play anywhere. There was a game last season, I think, when was it Luke McGrath got simmed in for 10 minutes and Issa went into scrum half, picked and went, dodged a few people and scored a try. I mean, he did play 12 a fair bit of memory serves back in his Auckland Blues days, as well as 10. We know he can play full back and we know he can play wing. I dare say he could probably play in the back row if push came to shove. About the only positions you'd rule him out of would be the front five. He's just a phenomenal talent, pound for pound, probably the best overseas signing that any province has ever made. When you think of his value and contribution over such sustained period of time to Leinster, the standards he has, but he lit up that match last Saturday. It was just trundling along. Then Issa got the ball and showed this magical footwork of a natural number 12 and just sauntered through. And really, that's where the breakthrough try by Jameson Gibson Park came from. I think it's a viable option for them, given the injury to Robbie Henshaw and his delay in coming back. And who knows, it might even prolong this everlasting career because, you know, out in the wider channels, when you get into your late mid-30s or so forth, you're liable to lose a bit more pace and it becomes more of a factor, and it's less of a factor at 12. So who knows?
I imagine, Keith, it's pretty exciting for Johnny Sexton or Joey Carberry as well to have Eason Asewa standing outside you at 12.
Well, it's pretty kind of cool. That guy is on, you know, he has been on fire and since he's come back from his retirement, which is kind of interesting. I played for a season with John Schuster, former All Black, and he was 37 when he joined us. He was a goal kicker. He played 10 or 12. I don't think he was tackled once in the whole period of time. He played the ball, played it very well. He was thinking about five steps ahead of everybody else because he knew he physically couldn't run there. So his passing became better, his kicking became better. And he offered so much around because he knew this was the end of it. He wanted to enjoy every single second of it. And I don't know that it's anywhere near the end for Issa, which is kind of entertaining. He seems to have touched his toe in the fountain of youth. So he played well. He played well last week.
Yeah, he's 35 now.
Good God.
No suggestion that he is near the end. An expectation around Leinster that he has another 2-3 years in him?
I'm not sure that his contract isn't up until the end of this season or that a new deal, so we see where it goes from there. His powers don't seem to have diminished in any way, shape or form, and he's such a natural footballer. He's got so much natural strength. He's got footwork. He's still very quick. He's a very brilliant tackler. He's got so many brilliant passers, so many streams of the game. At times, he doesn't look the most natural kicker of the ball out of his hand you've ever seen in your life. But I remember when he first pitched up in Leinster, he was dropping goals as well. Like, there's nothing he can't do. I remember Jamie Heaslip once describing him as the best player he ever played with. You know, whenever somebody got through, once they knew Issa was last man defending there at fullback, said, best of luck whoever's going through one-on-one there because they weren't going to get past him. Keith has spoken about this, and we've spoken about this in this programme at length, that the values of taking a break from the game, certainly, you know, Brad Thorne's done it, Dan Carter's done it, so many have done it, Richie McCaw, and I think Issa was out of the game for 2 years, wasn't he? So it's doubtful that he would still be playing now had he not taken that break.
Mm. A quick mention maybe, Keith, for Devon Toner. He's making his 200th appearance for Leinster at the RDS. He's one of those players, probably a bit like Max Deegan, that it can be a slow burner. There's no point rushing it. I think he made his debut when he was 19. It's 3-4 years later before he fully established himself in that Leinster squad. And it was interesting listening to him talk this week where he was on about maybe it took him a long time to get used to his body shape, to realise just how he could make the most of his height advantage?
I think it took a long time for us to get used to his body shape. You know, he was, I mean, he was ungainly at the start, and he hadn't grown into his body. I think he probably didn't until he was 22 or 23. And then he bulked up quite significantly. And I remember talking on here when he very early, I think, when I started with Off the Ball, when I said, look, he needs to be able to carry the ball. And I don't know who it was on the other side, was giving me a hard time, saying, look, he's too tall. But he weighs so much. He's a huge man. And, you know, I love when you see a player that, yes, he's very tall. But with that are huge limitations. It's very, very difficult to use that height and weight effectively. And I think he has got the most out of his talent. And I think that is a really impressive thing to say about any player. I just think he has played, got better and better, and then has had 4 or 5 years where his level of performance has been fantastic. And there's times he gets caught out of position because he is 6'10" or 11" or whatever he is. And that's just the nature of it. But he never seems to let it get him down. And I think he's been integral to Ireland's really fine line-out play for the last number of years. He has to be nothing short of a huge comfort to a hooker that's standing, knowing that you can throw to this guy in the middle, and has given a high level of security to Ireland's line-out. So to get to 200 matches, being the size he is pretty extraordinary.
We might look at Ulster then. They started with a win as well over the weekend, that comfortable 42-19 win over the Cheetahs. It does feel like a real pivotal year for Ulster after several seasons of disappointment, and a big year for Les Kiss as well. Concern in Ulster with the loss of Ruan Pienaar and Paddy Jackson, from what you saw of John Cooney and Christian Leofilano, enough there to ease those concerns?
Yeah, definitely. I thought they looked the part. Christian Leofilano is a very shrewd signing in the circumstances they're in, and I remember watching him, you know, cut his teeth as a Wallaby Test player against the Lions in 2013. He's a very polished footballer. He's had a fantastic comeback to be able to play again, and it's a nice story as well. But he looks like a very shrewd signing. I think if they stay fit and well, that's the key for them, because, you know, Pienaar and Jackson are difficult act to follow, particularly Ruan Pienaar. He was such an integral part of the fabric up there. He was such an iconic figure for the crowd, for this, such a drawing card for the playing squad as well. He was a leader in the group, and he generally came up with magical plays and key moments as much as anybody has done for Ulster in the latter years. I do think the big boon for them is having Marcel Coetzee back fit and well. He's almost like a new signing a year after the date. And just if they so much missed him last season, on top of losing Nick Williams, they just didn't have any go forward momentum. The player I'm really looking forward to seeing for Ulster this season as well is Ian Henderson. Having watched his form in the Lions tour, he was almost unfortunate. He drew the short straw in playing that first game when everybody was jet lagged and Provincial Barbarians, and he missed the opening kickoff, and it just set him back so much. But in reality, his form over the subsequent 4 midweek games was outstanding. I mean, his carrying was immense, and he really was, I think, another week and he probably would have made the test squad for sure, and probably would have deserved it in an uber competitive second row equation. If Ian Henderson stays fit and well, he's going to be a major player for them. If though him and Coetzee play well, stay fit and well, and give them that go forward, and you've got Cooney and Leofilano at 9 and 10 running the show, well, it's interesting to see Charles Beattie, the way he played at the weekend. It looks like the Charles Piatow we saw in the first half of last season, who was the most dynamic ball-carrying player in the whole competition. And then, I don't know, he seemed to be replaced by his first cousin in the second half of the season, but it looks like he's back to his best again, which is a huge boon for them.
Where do you expect Henderson to play the majority of his rugby this season, Keith, now that Marcel Coetzee is back, John Diesel's there, Chris Henry in the back row? Does it mean they have enough options in the back row that they push Henderson back to the second row?
I think Henderson's future is in the second row.
Yeah.
I think we have a huge strength and depth in Leinster, good chunk of guys in Munster, and the back row. I think Henderson is a second row, and I think it's a great pleasure to have a guy who, he's got bigger now as well. He's beginning to grow into his body a bit as well. I just think his feet as a second row are fantastic. You don't get the chance to show that quite as much when you're in the back row. You know, you need far more than just good feet. You need to have that extra step of pace, which I don't think he has. I think he can do a job, But I think he's a brilliant second row, and I would see him there entirely. I actually also thought it was good to see Tommy Bowe with a 13 on his back, and we don't have to just give our plaudits to people who've come over to our shores. Tommy, who is getting a bit older and has had a good few injuries, and
the same thing, Keith, isn't it? His career could last a bit longer with that switch, couldn't it?
Well, it could, because he's a very intelligent player, and if he can manage to play, I'm not going to say within himself too much, but you know, he needs to try and make certain that he can fully focus on his defensive duties at 13, I think his skills and his handling skills and his eye for the game will mean that we can get the most out of him and the last bit out of him too.
We might give a very quick mention then to Connacht, who are the only Irish province to lose. Jerry, Kieran Keane afterwards saying that they just need to play a little bit smarter. It was a tough game to start with against Glasgow Warriors. Much sign of a vastly different game plan?
It's hard to judge just yet. I think it will evolve, that we will see a less structured ball game playing to a system, that players will have to think on their feet a lot more. And with the kind of game that Keane is trying to introduce, it's inevitably going to take a little bit of time. He's only there 3 weeks. I know he'd been over back and forth during the season while he was working with the Chiefs as well. But you would imagine they're only going to get better. It was by some distance the toughest of the four games the Irish province had to face. By some distance, Glasgow Warriors coming to town, and they were
held, the dirtiest weather, Jerry. It was like a monsoon.
So it was very much out of keeping with the rest of the weekend. Too early to make very big judgments.
I was going to say, Keith, go on, make some sort of wild prediction from what you've seen from the opening weekend.
I won't. And I like to see what happens after the first 3 or 4 weeks. I still go back to our news talk colleague George Hook writing off Joe Schmidt after about 4 weeks a few years ago, and that's the cautionary tale.
Yeah, we won't go any further into that. Great stuff as always, Keith. We'll talk to you next Wednesday. You too, Jerry. Thanks as always for joining us in studio. Up next, we have an in-depth interview with the Mayo manager, Stephen Rochford.
Off the Ball on News Talk,
in association with the Air Sport app, allowing you to cast your favourite sporting action from your tablet or mobile phone straight to your TV.